Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. We have another amazing guest today. But before we bring her on, I want to thank everybody that's listening for making us a top 10 podcast, not only on Spotify, but on Apple. And it's not because of my voice or what I do, it's because of these amazing guests that I have. And I'm so excited to bring her on because she has an amazing story. She's a fellow police officer. As well. So we're going to get into that. And again, she's a police captain. She's so again, when I read the bio, Heather, I was just like kind of blown away. You know what I mean? I mean, police captain, law enforcement professional, instructor, keynote speaker, law enforcement coach, and on the side she does cleaning and she does a lot of different things. We have the one, the only Heather Gloklich today. How are you, Heather?
I'm well. Thank you so much. How are you?
Good. I was just worried about trying to say that name right as I was doing my opening little monologue there. So, thank you so much for coming on. You are, in fact, the last show of the year.
Oh,
So,
look at
you will get a, we're gonna close out with a bang. So, I'm excited to do this. So, we have a lot to talk about, right? So, we have some craziness, right? Kind of a pivotal moment in your life that kind of changed things. I want to get to go down that road. Before we do, I just want to get a little background on you and to get right into things to make it pretty simple. Is being a police officer or being in law enforcement something you always wanted to do, or is it something that just kind of went as the time went on?
yeah, it's something I can remember wanting to be a part of ever since I was a kid. Law enforcement shows
Oh,
were something
really?
I was drawn to. Nobody in my family's ever been a cop. Nobody in my family's ever been in law enforcement or a first responder or anything. And I was just always really drawn to the crime shows all the time. And I felt like I was really good at puzzles and putting pieces together and reading people and wanting to help. And I took a criminology class in high school and I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
And you know, it's funny. I grew up, my father was a cop. My brother was a cop. My uncle was a cop. My other uncle was a transit cop. And coming from Staten Island, you know, when I said, oh, I want to be into filmmaking, doing it, my father's like, listen, that's a dream. You're going to be a cop. So for me, it was, you know, it was kind of preordained that at some point I was going to be a cop. Again, something I'm happy we did, but it's funny because I never was drawn into that. So, and a lot of, former police officers and current police officers, FBI, CIA, they all have the same answer as you do, which, you know, they kind of grew up on it. They were attracted to it. And, you know, they kind of knew that's the route they wanted to go down. So, when you go into, now you're in Jersey, right? You born in Jersey?
Born and raised
Born and
Jersey girl
raised.
for
I'm a Jersey guy for now, but that, and again, so they have their own academy, a different type of academy, right? Then is it longer? Is it shorter than the NYPD? Is it, we were 6 months.
It fluctuates. So sometimes it's 20 weeks. Mine was 22 weeks. Corrections is a little shorter, but mine was 22 weeks. So January through June. So about 6 months the same.
Okay, so when you go into the academy, right? What year is that? It's
2004.
2000, or I got in 1994, so you know, I get it. But so you go in 2004. Two questions I have. A, is it what you kind of expected when you get in there? A, and B, was it weird? Not weird. Let me take that back. Were you looked at differently because you were a female, even in
So
2004?
two really great questions. I was unprepared for what a police academy was. I think that I probably had expectations of what I wanted to get from it, but I really went in there with a survival mentality. And people who I knew that were cops were just like, just get through it. It's just 22 weeks of a 20 to 25 year career. Just get through it. That's it. Don't be the best. Don't be the worst. Get through it. And that was my mindset. I was one of six girls when we started out of a class of over 60, and I graduated as one of three girls. And
Now,
if
wait, what
I'm
happened to the other? Wait, I'm sorry. What happened to the other 57? Did you say there was
No.
57 girls?
No. I was one of six girls out of a class of over 60.
Gotcha. Yeah, and
Yeah.
three didn't make it. What
Three
happened?
didn't make it. I think
Gotcha.
one was firearms, another one was vehicle, and then I don't remember the other one actually, but
Okay.
I just remember there were six of us to start, and then three of us graduated. And I'm actually the only one who's still a cop. The one girl
All right,
just
fine.
retired, and the other one retired a long time ago. She's like, I don't think I want to be a law enforcement officer. I'm going to be a farmer. So there was that spin, and she's so happy, but that's great for her.
I
And I think that I put a lot of the pressure of being a female on myself. I don't know if the guys that I went through the academy with did that as far as my gender is concerned. I always, when I teach women about what it's like to be a cop and the things to let go of, I try to tell them that a lot of the misconceptions and the stigmas that we're kind of giving into are things that we're putting on ourselves. And we step into a room and try to prove ourselves all the time, regardless of whether or not we have to, because we feel we need to. So I don't know. I think the only time I really felt a significant difference between me and the men was when we watched the video of, Michelle Jeter. Her name was Jeter at the time. It's Michelle Meyer now, but it's that video from like 1997 where she's a trooper and she goes to stop a male with his daughter in an S in a minivan, and he pummels her on camera and like breaks her face basically immediately, and she's in a coma and all these things. And that was the only video in the academy that was about an officer being injured and officer safety issues. So I think in that moment, I felt like everybody was looking at me, wondering if I could handle myself. But again, I got the chance to meet her not too long ago, and it was just like I told her, over my 20-something year career, like, you've saved my life more than you've known because of that feeling, the hair on the back of my neck. I just always remembered Michelle and keeping distance and not just assuming that certain people wouldn't hurt me and not assuming that certain people would. So I think that's the only time in the academy I felt a difference.
Well, it's funny you said that because, again, we had a job and it was an EDP. For anybody that hasn't heard our podcast, an EDP is an emotionally disturbed person. So we had gone there. My partner was a big guy. At that time, I was a lot bigger. And he was about 5'3", right? So we went in there, like, and he was on PCP. And he, excuse my language, he fucked us up. He fucked us up. So, and then emergency service came and they tased him. And he looked down and he went, and he took the tasers out and he was wrestling with all four of us. The reason why I'm even saying this is, yes, no matter what, female, male, what have you, never have your guard down prejudging who you are going to potentially, car stop, make an arrest, whatever it is. But that's why I wanted to say that because you're absolutely right because you can't make that mistake because you never know, right? So, yeah. So, once that happens, right? So you speak to her. I mean, I'm not speak to her. You see the video. So again, indirectly, again, it was almost like you admit I'm very into like things are supposed to happen and the synergy and stuff. And almost you were meant to see that video because you had said something that almost she helped you many times without even without her even knowing who you are because of that, right? So yes. So how does that affect you directly once you get onto the job?
I think looking back now, it's so much easier to say that when you reflect back on what your career has been and the situations you've been in. But I distinctly remember a car stop I was on, and a male jumped out of the car and started walking at me before I got out of the car. And in Jersey, most places, you're not riding with a partner. So my agency, we didn't, unless it was a special detail or we were allowed to double car because we had enough people. I know, like in New York City, it's always a double car. In Newark, it's
Always,
pretty much always in
always.
Newark, a double car. But, and as he jumped out, I immediately was like, just it, I can remember remembering her. And so there's always been instances where I felt as though I needed to be prepared for everything, but not paranoid about everything. And I think that really made me feel as if I wasn't a part of anyone. Like, these aren't conversations you have about your prepared mindset. And some people make you feel like you're paranoid when you approach the job in a way where you're trying to be ready for absolutely every situation. And so your mind is going a million places at the same time as you're approaching a scene or even after. But I honestly think that's what makes me a really good cop. And it's what I encourage any cop to do. It's like, yeah, all right, well, you got this outcome, but what else? Right? Like, what else can come from this? Like, think bigger, think grander. And a lot of people are like, well, you care too much, you want too much. Well, I don't see what's wrong with that. But again, so I think that video indirectly had so many different effects on me because, I sat in that classroom that day and I felt different. And I was like, you know what? I know that I need to do more to be better. Whether it's for perception or just for myself, I have to do more. I have to be pre better prepared. And I failed at that a lot throughout my career and until probably the last 5 years where I really started putting myself first and my health and all of those things, which again, they talk about in the academy a little bit, but they don't enforce the why behind it.
Right. And it's funny because we get to go back. Once you see, same thing with us too. Where was the first place you went to once you got to the academy? Where were you what command did you go? What was your first precinct?
We don't have precincts. I mean, Newark does, some other agencies do, but I got hired by the Morris County Sheriff's Office, so I went right into
Okay.
courts. And then I
Oh,
didn't stay very long, and I transferred to a municipal police department. So,
okay.
you
Okay,
know.
so when you got there, right? When we used to get out of the academy, what they would tell us is, forget everything forget everything you learned. This is how it's done, right? So when you finally get on the street, right, for after you transfer the courts, what was the biggest misconception or surprise when you were actually now in the street?
I mean, it's evolved from who I was and what I believed back when I started to who I am now and what I see to be the truth based on conversations and understanding. I think back then, again, it was that mindset of I have to prove myself all the time. And, I had a really close friend who was technically my subordinate, but I transferred out of Morris Township back in 2023 and I had a great squad, man. What a good group of guys. And I was getting ready to transfer, and we were going to a call that was like a use of force. And I'm like, all right, let's go. I'm in, because I'll be hands-on even as a lieutenant. I'll get in it. And honestly, I'd rather take that on myself sometimes and have my guys go through that. But so he's like, hey, LT, you don't have to. I was like, oh, do you not think that I can? He's like, no, we know you can. You just don't have to. We've got you. And what a mindset change just from that small statement. And really start. Now, listen, there are guys that believe that I cannot do this job because I'm a female, and there always will be, or it's the narrative that people want to play off of. And I think that the biggest change I've noticed, especially with being able to have opportunities like this and be on a podcast or to travel the country and speak to other law enforcement officers and to sit in a room with great leaders, is that we are taught to believe that our world is so singular and so small when it's not. So I wish when I was a rookie, someone had told me that this only matters right now. And the world is so much bigger. And don't change who you are to fit this job. Fit the way you do the job to who you are. And I don't think back then in 2004, 2005, we did that. It was cookie cutter, show up, wear this, do this, look like this, act like this. And so I always felt I had to come off with a machismo. I was always worried about my femininity coming through, even though I knew that was a strength of mine, depending on who I was working with or who I was interviewing or dealing with. And I think really that's the biggest change and the one misconception that I fed myself that no one negated either.
Right. Well, but you know what? It almost sounds, and correct me if I'm wrong, and it may, maybe I'm totally off base. It almost sounds indirectly that you put it on yourself to almost try to prove yourself on a regular basis because you were a female. More so, right? More so than maybe the guys, even like, again, listen, it's cops, right? So no matter what, female cops, I have female partners, whatever, you break each other's balls, right? It is what it is. It's, that's the camaraderie of that's if you said, Steve, what's I only did 7 years, so I got injured or what have you. But if the only thing I ever missed was the guys, right? The camaraderie, the breaking ball, this and stuff. So would you say it's fair that you almost put this on yourself or no?
So I think that's not a question that I can unequivocally say yes or no to. I was around men that did not believe that I should be there. I was seen as only getting things because I was a girl, and they completely didn't see all the work I put in, the reports I wrote, the investigations I did, the pavement I beat in order to do the things. And
Right.
so, yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not a small girl. I'm 5'9". I'm strong. I'm not like I'm taller than a significant amount of cops now. And so
Yeah,
I
right.
don't know
Right.
what you, I don't
I
know.
said, right. You probably are.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact the guy that did my background recommended I not get hired. And you know, here I am. But you know, I think it's there's a different stigma with women, and I knew that, and I had to be cognizant of it. And I think I just wish I had a mentor, and that's what I try to do. I wish I had a female mentor to be like, it's okay to feel that way, but don't let it lead you in how you interact with everybody else. Don't make assumptions about how people are. And you know, I got a chance to prove myself really early on. We went to a call, and a girl was pushing past my guys, and she wasn't letting them in the house. And I basically said to her, you push one more of my guys and you're under arrest. And so she pushed one of my guys and I took her right to the ground. And I think from that point on, the guys are like, oh shit, okay, Heather's got our back there. Didn't mean they
Let's
necessarily
fucking
liked
go.
me,
Let's
but
fucking go. Let's
let's
go.
fucking go. But
But
yeah.
again, you said something else. I'm gonna say something else. One other thing, because I still get my mind sucks. My ADHD kicks in. You said you almost wish you had a female mentor, right? But in a way, going back to the academy, you almost did. In a way,
Yeah, so
watching
an
that
informal
video.
one. Yeah.
Informed, right, not like, she told you how to, whatever to do, or how, but I'm just saying that kind of put an impression on you, right, to do things a little differently before you even got out, right? Does
Yeah,
that
I mean,
make sense?
it does. And I see what you're saying. So I don't think of her as a mentor. I think of her as a role model. And I think
Oh,
those are two
okay.
separate things because I didn't
They
necessarily
are.
have contact with her. I didn't know who she was. I didn't even know she was still alive. I didn't know you could do those things. I mean, when I
Right.
in 2004, we didn't even really all have cell phones. You still hit a box if the dispatcher wanted
No,
to
right.
talk to you, you know? So, you know, Facebook was just starting, social media was getting bigger. But, you know, for me, I just, and I didn't want a female mentor back then. So let me be really clear. I fought like hell to be a part of the guys. But it would have been nice to have somebody who had already marched the road before me and been like, you don't have to be, you know?
Right.
So that's what I try to do for men also. I've had some great male mentors, but not one of them could be like, hey, this is what it's going to be like after you have a baby and you want to come back and fit in uniform and you know your boobs are leaking and you got to stay on a call and your hormones are raging and you're feeling depressed, but you can't talk about it because you're going to get your gun taken away, right? So, you know, that would have been really nice.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's funny thing is, and I got on 94. There was no cell phones. It was you had to call the command.
Computers.
You had to go to the hospital, a hospital, and call, or you'd have to find a phone,
Yeah.
and call. If they said they 10-2 to command, which means they need somebody wants to talk to you. It was crazy. But again, that was a better time as far as policing. That was just my opinion because there was no such thing. You have to worry about everywhere you were going. So I think you could be a better police officer back then. Not that we were doing anything wrong. We were just doing things differently because we didn't have to worry, right, about who's videoing you, what you do. So anyhow, where do you meet your husband?
In the
Your
police
husband, who's a
academy.
police officer in the police
My
academy.
ex-husband. My
So,
ex-husband. My husband
your
now is
ex-husband.
not a cop. So I just
Well,
want
right. Well, I was going to clarify that as we went along. But,
Yeah.
you broke the first cardinal sin, right? Is
I mean,
never date where you never shit where you sleep. That was the
well,
first.
him and I didn't work together at the same agency. So it's not like
All right.
NYPD where all the same cops go to the same academy. For us, it was a
Okay.
bunch of different agencies come together for those 22 weeks. So I kind of only pissed where I ate. I didn't shit where I ate, is the best way for me
No,
to put it.
that's not a bad way to put it. So, how do you guys reconnect and rekindle?
I mean, we dated in the police academy and we got out of the police academy and we continued to date.
Oh, okay. So you dated in a police academy and it just never stopped.
Correct. Yeah.
Got it. Makes sense. I thought maybe you met, maybe there was something there, and then you guys went on and happened to meet each other again, and so it was the whole time through.
For the most part, I mean, we started about halfway through the police academy. It wasn't immediately, but yeah. So, yeah. And then, I mean, I think there was at some point we had separated for a little bit. There was an argument over the fact I wanted to leave the sheriff's office and go to another agency, which was all male and on the road and being a quote unquote real cop, as he called it. And so that's kind of that was that added a little bit of friction, and we broke up, and then we got back together once I was already being hired by the township.
So was he, because already from saying that, was he possessive and jealous type? Because that to me already sounds like, why are you going there for it? So, it's all guys, what are you doing? So was there any type of set? And again, everybody listening is not familiar. I'm getting to a point here. That's why we're going through this road. But was there any early signs, anything early with him, thinking back, that kind of led to what
Oh,
happened?
100%. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, right? So,
Right,
this
absolutely.
was my re first real significant relationship, like a grown-up relationship. Like, here I am with my career. Here's someone I'm starting to date, and being, in this mindset of potentially this is my future. And so, the way he was charismatic about the way he was possessive was not something that was a red flag to see. So it would be like, again, just into the cell phone era. So it's not like text, 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 right? Or location sharing or any of those things. It was, phone call missed, I didn't call back. All of a sudden he'd be at headquarters with flowers being like, oh, I missed you. Or I'd be like, hey, there's a PBA meeting tonight, right? We didn't have shared calendars back then. And he would be like, oh, I made dinner reservations, and if I cancel, then they're going to charge. So there were these like little ways of kind of pulling me apart. And, his reason for me not going to the Morris Township was, you'll be on shift work, I'll be on shift work, we'll see each other less. If this is something where we're going to have kids, you working in a sheriff's office Monday through Friday with holidays off will be better. It was all of those things that make sense, and it wasn't, it was a conversation that he guided into being possessive. But I mean, even back then, I was like, yeah, I don't care what you want. Like, I don't have kids left yet. So, yeah, there were definitely little things and ways that he manipulated the situation that were not necessarily abusive, but they were ways of kind of taking me away from the things that made me who I was. And so, yeah, I mean, looking back now, when you put them all together, well, here's a pretty red bow. This was domestic violence. But, individually, when the things happened, I was just like, oh, well, he loves me. He missed me. He was worried about me. Like, the job is dangerous. He wants to spend time with me. We don't have a whole lot of time because of shift work. That's where my head was.
Gotcha. So you guys obviously you were in the academy in 2004. You guys met. So do you guys get married? You got, of course. I mean, it sounds like you get married pretty quickly because then you have two children, right?
So we started dating probably March of 2004. We got married in March of 2006, pregnant pretty quick. And then I had my oldest in January of 07. I got pregnant again, and I had my son in February of 08.
Okay, so okay, so that's for everything's kind of pretty quick. Everything's quickly,
Yeah, Irish Catholic, boom, boom, boom.
Irish guy, exactly, because I happen to be married, unfortunately, for numerous times. But when I went from my second to my third, I waited like 6 years, before, and it was like a shit don't get off the pot type of thing.
Yeah.
So. Right. So anyhow, again, you have a life-changing experience, that again is catastrophic. But before that happens, and we're, again, everybody listening, we're going to get into this. Was there any signs leading up? I mean, I know he was drunk, really drunk to the point where, he passed out. Was there other times like leading up to this that he was either drinking or physically abusive, not physically abusive, but mentally abusive, or
Oh no, I
and
mean, he
if he
was physically
was,
abusive too. So, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I'm saying that if he was, did you ignore the signs? Did you just, kind of brush them off, or, leading up to the event of that date, was there anything prior, or was just the first time?
Yeah, I mean, the first time that there was any physical assault was on our honeymoon. And
Really?
what a beautiful example of gaslighting. Because we were in the Dominican Republic, both 100% drunk because it was all you can eat and all you can drink, and I'm gonna get my money's worth, right? So
And that's
we're at
pretty typical cop right there. That's a
the
typical
bar.
cop mentality
No,
out
it's
there. Whoever's listening, cop.
yeah.
Cop's
Yeah.
cop right there. Go ahead. I'm
Gotta
sorry. Go ahead.
get my money's worth. So, we're at Beautiful Island, and we meet this couple at the bar. They're from New York, crazy enough. And we're talking, and he goes to the bathroom, the wife goes to the bathroom, he walks back, and I was like laughing at something the guy said. And all of a sudden his face changed. He's like, "I want to go back to the room." I was like, "Okay, honeymoon, let's go back to the room. Yay." And as we're walking back, he's like not talking. And so I am 100% being antagonistic. I'm like, "What's your problem? Blah blah blah." And at that point, he pushes me up against a wall and he puts his hands around my neck and he starts to strangle me. And he's like, "I could kill you down here and no one would find you and no one would know." And I was like, "Oh my God." He lets go. We go back to the room. He passes out drunk. I eventually pass out drunk. Now, again, I didn't have international calling. Like, who was I gonna call? Like, this is my
Right.
honeymoon. What am I gonna do? And I woke up the next
And
morning and
he's a
Jason
cop,
was
and he's also a cop. So even if you could call
also a
someone at the
cop.
time, he's gonna lose his job or get his guns taken, what have you.
Yeah.
So yeah. So
Yeah, I mean, I
I
love
get
that
it.
you brought that up because that was very much a key significant factor in me not telling people throughout my entire abusive marriage. But, I woke up and he acted like nothing was wrong. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, did I just dream that? Because again, strangulation, you're not going to see marks maybe. If there's any petechia, it's gone pretty quickly. So I had slept, I was bloodshot eyes because, I was drunk anyway. So, there were no signs that what had just happened had actually happened. And I was like, oh my goodness, like if I bring this up, I'm ruining our honeymoon if it didn't happen. And if I bring it up and I enrage him again, what if he does something? So I think at that moment I made the conscious decision to be like, this didn't really happen. No one can act like nothing happened. If it did happen, like that's not something I could do. So, there was that, and then we got pregnant pretty quickly, and it was more of financial, emotional, mental abuse than it was physical. There was one other time when he was physical and then he attempted suicide. And so I had to talk him down from, trying to blow his brains out in our room with our daughter sleeping, and that's when he promised, "I'll stop drinking. I'll go to counseling." And listen, very devout Irish Catholic family who did not talk about their problems, his mom had died when he was younger. His dad and him didn't have a great relationship. His father was a chief of police, or he alleged that they didn't have a great relationship, And so I said in sickness and in health, and I didn't know much about alcoholism. I just knew that he was making a conscious effort to do better. And so I gave him that chance. And that chance led me down the road to October 16th, 2008, which you started to refer to in the beginning of this.
Yes. So October 16th comes, right? And this is basically the fork in the road that basically changes everything. So bring us down that road. So let's go through October 16th. What leads to this? What kind of leads to this whole thing? How does this unravel? If you don't mind telling everybody, if you want to be as candid as you can, or I get it. So
Yeah,
you let me
no.
know.
I mean, I tell the story all the time. So, it was October 16th, 2008. I was already asleep, and the kids were asleep. And he came home, and he opened up the door to our bedroom. And as he slammed it open, I was asleep. I woke up. He goes, "That's it. I'm done." And at that point, I thought he was talking about like our marriage because it just had not been great communicative wise. I mean, he was an alcoholic. I questioned everything I thought about myself and whether I was a good cop because he was so good at manipulating me into thinking I was making things up about him being drunk. He would, I didn't have any proof that he was purchasing it. He opened up credit cards I didn't know about. He was hiding bottles in the insulation of our detached garage. Like it was just, he was so good at hiding that he was an alcoholic. And so here I am questioning if I'm not getting it right with him. Am I getting it right at work? And I was just like, it was just constant fighting. And anyone who's ever been in a relationship with an alcoholic, you never know who you're going to get. So it's almost like you're always walking around on eggshells. So I just couldn't live that way anymore. And I was like, well, if this is my out of this marriage, then I'm going to take it. Well, I was like, all right, well, I'm done too. And that was the wrong answer. And, he dragged me by my hair into the living room. And for 4 hours, he literally just beat the shit out of me. He whipped me with a belt on my legs, told me that since it was October, if he let me live, that at least I could hide the marks. He strangled me twice. Once I lost consciousness, I urinated myself. That's how long he strangled me for. He headbutted me, bit my face. He tried to get me to kill myself by putting a knife in my hand, saying that he had to make it look like a suicide because he wasn't going to lose his kids. He screamed at me the entire time and just berated me and made me feel like everything was my fault. And I don't honestly feel as though when I was in that moment looking back, I don't think I ever believed that he was going to kill me. I think it was just something I thought I had to endure until he wasn't drunk anymore. And I came to find out that the catalyst was that he had just been charged with or served papers that he was being or criminally with planting evidence on a male in West Orange where he was a cop, and then excessive use of force. And so I'm sure that's what kind of made him snap. I think he wanted to kill himself. I think he wanted to die that night, whether I was going to do it or the cops coming would have done it. And instead I took the beating for 4 hours. And it kind of culminated with him taking off his like flannel jacket, flannel shirt, and I could see that his gun was in his waistband. And at that point he's like, call out of work. I called out of work and I was like, well, shit, now I just gave him 5 days to bury my body, which is a really weird thought, but that's just what I thought because nobody's gonna look for me for 5 days. And then he's like, call your dad and say goodbye. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like I knew then, and I probably couldn't have articulated it then. I know I couldn't have, but I know that if I called my dad would have either shown up or had the cops come. And I would have just rathered it be me dealing with it than anybody else. Cause as a cop, you start to think about all the things. And this is where the paranoid aspect of my brain, where everybody thinks I'm paranoid, but I tend to think it's just me being prepared. I was like, man, if bullets come flying in, like, could my kids get struck? What if they wake up? What if he takes them as hostage? Like, all of those things were in my mind. And I was like, I'm just gonna take it until it's to the point where he's not this drunk anymore. And so he pulls the gun out of the waistband. I'm on the ground. He puts, he wraps it around in, and as he puts a pillow over my face, he takes the barrel of the gun and he pushes it against
God.
my head and he starts to pull the trigger. And there's that slow creak. And I mean, cops know it. Anybody who's handled a gun knows it. You bring it back to that wall. And I honestly thought he shot me because everything was dark. I didn't hear anything. I didn't even hear him breathing. I couldn't tell if I was breathing. I was probably holding my breath. And then what felt like forever, but I obviously was not. He just collapses next to me and he starts crying and he ends up passing out. And I laid there until everybody woke up. I was too scared to move with all the thoughts that suck, right? Like, how am I going to tell people? Are they going to believe me? Am I going to lose my job? Like, all the things that I shouldn't have had to worry about. Like, I should have just been like, I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to save my own life. It's going to be fine. I'll have the support. But it wasn't like that back then. And it's not even like that now. I try to create that space. I have a great circle of people that do, but that's what this policing world does to you. We're constantly trying to survive this job of policing. And sometimes it means we're surviving our own lives when we shouldn't have to. And one thing led to another. He woke up. I ended up getting him to leave the house. I called the cops. He was arrested. He was charged with a significant amount of crimes. Went in front of a grand jury, lied, and they turned around and they charged him with perjury and kidnapping on top of his original charges. In and out of jail on bail and bail release, and he ended up taking a plea deal. He was looking at about 75 years in jail consecutively, and instead he took a plea deal for 6 months, to which he did 2 months in 1 week, and was out. He could never be a cop again, but I ended up having a co-parent with him. For the rest of my.
That's fucking insane, first of all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously you had an active order of protection, right? I mean, he couldn't come with the X amount of, with you. He couldn't call you. He should have been like this, right? You had an order of protection. He can't be within, X amount of feet within. He can't be down the block driving.
So,
Did they
yes
give
and
you that?
no. So I had an order of protection. We call it, there's two in New Jersey. There's a restraining order system that is put out there by the victim only, which can be dropped by the victim at any time, can be put through. You have to go to a trial if you want it to be a final restraining order. And I knew that he was a psychopath and that he was going to want his job back and he was going to try and fight me. And within 10 days, you have to go back to court after this incident happens. And I just didn't have it. And they put a no contact order in place, which is part of bail. And I assumed he was going to jail for a really long time. But as soon as he got out, that no contact order was dropped. And he had 5 years of probation, but unless he did something else, I wasn't able to apply for another order.
Well, wait a minute. What happened to the other part where he planted evidence and had the excessive force? That didn't get kind of conglomerated in with everything he
So, from what I know, there was a civil lawsuit that happened, but West Orange terminated him immediately. And basically, this is what I know, and I don't know it to be 100% true. It's just kind of what I've gathered from over the years that they were just like, we're not going to deal with that because he's in jail. And they dealt with the people that were actively working alongside of him. I mean, because honestly, what's going to happen? Like, if there's no criminal charges and the prosecutor's office didn't take it on because there wasn't enough evidence, then the civil suit came. So that really wouldn't have had anything to do with me. Two separate counties, one was family, one was criminal, one was civil, you know. So no, they
I got
didn't
it.
come on. Yeah.
So, I'm sorry to jump. So, when he passed, so after all that, I mean, do the cops finally, what, I mean, what do you do? I mean, you finally break down and, what, again, was he, were you still, because again, now as we get into domestic violence and real fast, because this is how we all think, right? Because we're kind of in this and, you're in this treadmill. Were you at some point after all this, any part of you saying, I'm going to get back with him, or I want to, was there anything like that there? Or that was it. That was, I mean, obviously,
Oh, no, I mean, I'm human, right? And I have two children with this man.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think it was like this outward feeling of I want to get back together with him. I think I just wanted my children's lives to be easier. I wanted him to be a better person. I wanted him to be a good father. I wanted all the things that I had no control over. So I don't know if I would articulate that I wanted to get back together with him. I hated this man. I hated what he did to me. I hated that he wasn't strong enough to make the right choices. And, you know, I've learned to let go of that, you know, through a lot of growth and things. 'Cause at the end of the day, he gave me two of my most beautiful gifts in this world, my oldest daughter and my son. But, you know, there were times where he was manipulative and you know, I'm like, man, maybe he is doing the work. Maybe he's doing these things. But I had already moved on. Like, I wanted to have a relationship with him, but not an intimate relationship. I wanted to co-parent positively. I wanted to, you know, show a united front for our children because they should have been the priority. But we never really had the opportunity to do that. There were a couple times we came together when my kids were in crisis for some things and were on the same page and supported each other. And those are the times that I believed him to be sober and having good influences. But he never had power over his sobriety. He never had power against the bottle. It always took him and his demons, and he just didn't do the work.
It's crazy because God forbid, and this will be the last thing we talk about during that incident, is because he was so drunk, right? And he had the gun over the pillow, right, over your head. At some certain point, I mean, thank God it didn't happen. But even if he didn't have the intention, because of his state of mind, he could have just put, like, accidentally fell over and pulled the trigger. And you know what I mean? So God forbid. So again, I mean, it's crazy. And I come from a family that my dad was like that. And, it was not just there's fun drunks, right? And then there's nasty drunks. So
Yeah.
my father's father died in the street, about alcoholism. And my father was like, because you said something prior, when he would come home, he was a womanizer and a drinker. And he got better later in life, but during my, it's funny because my brother and sister are like 11 and 12 years older than me, so I was like an oops baby. So they had a good dad. I had a whole separate time, and when he was drinking, I you said something funny because I always say the same expression. I would be walking on eggshells because you just want, you want everything just to be okay so he doesn't go off. You know what I mean? So. It's crazy. And again, I don't know if it comes with being a cop. I don't know. I don't know if it's just, who knows? I don't know. But I just made it a point in my life, never, I don't drink. I never did that, what have you. But anyhow, this whole incident, right? Kind of, you took it, right? As fucking shitty and as crazy as that is. And you took it as a positive, right? And you kind of use that to create all this other stuff you're doing and become an advocate, which is truly, that's amazing, right? So you could have went two ways. You could have been like, woe is me, I'm a victim, I'm this. But what Heather does is, take it and spin it and now made it a positive influence for other people. And again, your story is so unique. Not unique. I don't know what the percentages of husband wife cops actually that happens to, but you're the first one I know about. So the uniqueness of that, was it a big thing in the press or no?
It was, and people were really cruel. And that was my first taste. And listen, when you're a victim of domestic violence and you're alive, there's confidentiality. Your name's not going to be put out there. But I mean, it's kind of easy to figure out. But there were comments like, "I wonder what she did to deserve it. What did a woman do to provoke a man to go this far?" There were allegations of infidelity on my part, which is hard because how do you negate that, right? When it's not true, and you always feel like you have to defend it, and it's like. I had a 20-month-old and an 8-month-old and a full-time job as a career. Like I couldn't like go to the bathroom without a kid under my feet. And it just, it's all these things that come together. And going through it at that time, I with all the press that was going on, I didn't have a whole lot of support from my department. I was so embarrassed by what happened. I felt like I let it happen, like I let it get that far. I took so much guilt and I love that you said that it's something that's unique because I thought the same thing. And I put that on myself. I was like, women aren't this stupid, like that are, especially cops, they know better. And as I've started to tell my story, the more and more women I meet that are on the job and men too, which I actually love even more. Like, I know, I hate that it's happening, but I love that men are comfortable talking to me about. Hey, I'm dating this girl and she's holding my job over my head. She's saying that she's going to pretend that I hurt her or do these things. That's domestic violence, right? And it's against our men in blue as well. So it's not unique. I'm not stupid. I think for the very same reasons that I became a cop or the very same reasons I stayed in my marriage, I want to help people. I want to help them be the best versions of themselves. And while I started as a cop trying to help the community and the people, like transforming into the leader that I am, I realize that my purpose is really helping cops more than it is helping people outside. And maybe that's the domino effect that comes with it. But it was a victim of domestic violence that forced me into this position of opening up about what I went through because she wasn't going to leave this person. And she was like, "You never understand. You're this strong cop." I'm like, "Girl, have a seat. Let's get a cup of coffee." And I told her. And she pressed charges against him. He went away. She was so strong. And I realized that, listen, we can all become victims of crimes, right? We can all become victims of something, but we make the choice to remain a victim. And I didn't want him to continue to have that power over me. And so I turned my pain into purpose and I became a survivor instead of allowing for the re-victimization of everything that was going on. And it's not easy. I hear shit all the time. You'll probably have comments on the podcast about me. And it's just, yeah, I stopped caring about what people think about me. They don't, I wouldn't accept the opinions of others if I wouldn't accept advice from them. And that's kind of
Well,
where I've held on
I'm sorry, but I don't mean to jump in.
to.
What possibly, because you said people are gonna give negative comments. What about what you just said to me would drive someone to listen to this and say something negative towards you? Because I guess what you're saying is it's happened, right? So
Oh yeah.
what part of that story can they turn around on you?
Oh, anything they want. Anything they want. And here's what I've really learned through a lot of therapy and I do EMDR and I've done a lot of self-reflection. There are a lot of things in my story that I pushed away. And so as the years go on, things come back in your brain. And this is the same thing with post-traumatic stress. With officers, first responders, you start to suppress all these things that happened, and you almost don't believe them that they actually happen anymore. You wonder whether or not your mind is expanding or whether or not you dream it was real. And so I'll have people come at me all over the place, anything anybody can pick at if they want to be that bully, they will. And So you'll see it. Somebody on here, like if we started talking about how I was promoted or all the things, somebody would turn around and want to be cruel because it makes them feel better about themselves. And you know, I've been on a bunch of podcasts before. They pick and choose the things that they hear and what they want to hear, and they manipulate it. And you know, you're going to have people who abuse women or abuse men on listen to this podcast that you have, and they're going to be like, yes, she deserved it, or you know, she's fabricating it. How could someone who did everything that he did really only ever get two years or 2 months in 1 week? Like, those are the things people will try to pick apart because of what they hear, what they want to believe is true. And it's either because they love to be able to push the envelope and to feel like they have a voice and they have to do it in a negative way, or it's because they don't want to believe the truth, right? I listened to the podcast you did with the female reporter over Jeffrey Dahmer. And the one significant aspect that the two of you spoke about that, like, really, the whole entire podcast was absolutely phenomenal. But the one thing that really struck me, because people do it now, that sometimes they're too scared to ask the questions because they're scared that I don't want to answer it or it's going to trigger me or whatever. I'm an open book. But she said that people will come up and ask the questions about what body parts he ate. And you were like, people want to either identify the monster or they don't want to know because they want to keep that in their imagination. They don't want it to be the person next door. And it's the same thing with intimate partner violence. It's the same thing that we deal with on the road. We see the monsters. And so, you know, and right now I think the biggest monsters are the keyboard warriors who have nothing better to do than sit here and pick people apart and Monday morning quarterback the things that they don't know the intimate details about.
Well, I mean that's again, social media is the greatest thing in the world, right? And it's the worst because you give everybody the ability to have so I mean you could tweet the president. Right, which is fucking insane, but you can, right? So we don't know if he's reading it or whatever, but so some I don't want to sound terrible, but some redneck in mid America could go and go to Donald Trump's ex and account and say what he wants to him. It's crazy. But in the same token, someone like yourself, someone we can reach out as many people as follow you. You can reach out whatever you say. Reach out to all your followers, the people and that's a powerful thing, right? So, like I said, I wouldn't worry about it. Again, I wouldn't worry. I don't even read the comments, so I wouldn't even.
Oh, I'm
If
not
you
worried
called,
about it.
if you reached out to me one day, say, "Can you believe that motherfucker said this about me?" I'd be like, "Heather, I wouldn't even pay any attention to it because you're
Yeah,
giving
I'm not
them."
that dumb.
Yeah, no. So, in closing, and thank you so much. I mean, I could talk to you for another hour or two, but in closing, everybody that's listening, how can they find you? What are you doing now as well? Because you do, like I said, I mentioned all these things you were doing before. You're like, I don't know how you find the time, but how does anybody reach you on social media or follow you?
So I have a social media account. I'm on LinkedIn, Heather Glowglitch. I'm also on Instagram, Heather underscore empowered policing. And you know, I'm kind of just navigating this world of being in a position where I can retire, but still really loving being a leader at the agency that I'm at and developing, you know, the next level of leadership that is servant leadership based. And I'm going to be working with some great organizations. So I'm hopefully becoming a part of a company called Sharp Performance, which is for first responders, and it's a coaching platform, but has a mental health aspect behind it, and it's a beautiful program. So I'm gonna start working with them hopefully in January, so I can really get on a deeper level with law enforcement officers, first responders, military, paramedic, whatever it is, because I decided to go back to school again for a master's in social work because I just where I work pays for it, and so I just felt that there was such a gap between the criminal justice system and victims, right? The criminal justice system is just that. It's a justice system for criminals, and victims kind of get put on the wayside. So I just want to advocate for victims on a level where I don't have to worry about payment or time or choosing. So there's that. And then I have an email, Heather at empoweredpolicing.com. I'm also the president of New Jersey Women in Law Enforcement. So I'm still really active with that, where we have a conference every March. It's going to be upcoming, where we have 600 cops from all over New Jersey show up and some of the most phenomenal speakers. But yeah, I'm busy, four kids, married, doing all the things, training jujitsu like a psycho, you know.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Too bad you didn't do that fucking 20 years ago. You could have choked them
Amen.
out.
I mean, hell yeah.
So, one other quick question before I let you go. Again, I want to answer this before. So, you're remarried, right?
Am.
What is a relationship with your? I'm sorry. What's your husband's name? I don't
My
want to
current
refer to him
husband
as.
is Matt.
Yes, Matt. What is Matt's relationship, if at all, with him, your ex-husband? Do they
Well, my
have?
ex-husband killed himself 3 years ago.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
No,
I didn't
no,
know
it's
that.
okay. That's all right. I don't know if that was as publicized as it has been. Obviously, it's
No,
not really my
I didn't see
story.
that much.
Yeah. So, he ended up becoming
Holy
physical
shit.
with my son and he got arrested. And then he got married for a fourth time and
Oh
then
my
held her
God.
hostage and got taken in by the state police. And on December 11th of 2022, I think it was 2022. Yeah, 2022, he hung himself in jail. And so, I'm actually really glad you asked that question and we could clarify because I think that was the most freeing thing for me. Like, and what the crazy part is that I've been able to let go of so much hate. Like, I hate that he's gone. It's a hole for my kids. They never get to choose what their future is with their father. But like, I've chosen to love him now instead of hate him. I've chosen to be super thankful for everything he's given me, even the trauma that I endured. I wouldn't be the person I am. If we sit here and in whatever faith that you have, or whether or not you believe in the universe, or you believe in God, or wherever you are, if you focus on all the good things that happened to you and that's where you're thankful, then you're missing the point because it's the trials, it's the hard things that help you really, really be grateful for the good times. And so, in his death, there has been a whole lot of light. There's been forgiveness, there's been love, and it's hard for my daughter more than anybody else. My son is a lot like me. He's a light switch. Mess with me and oop, that's it, lights off. But there wasn't much of a relationship when he was around. My current husband is so good at balancing that line, and knowing when to step in and when not, knowing that I'm a very strong-willed, strong-minded person who didn't really want him to deal with that aspect of it, but I mean, it's been an evolution of something that was a minute by minute familial development ever since, he and I got together 13 years ago, 14 years ago. So.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, again, thank you so much. This is awesome. Again, that first of all, you're an amazing person. I want to say that. Thank you for your service. The fact that you're still going on is great. Everything you've done is inspirational. In fact, I have a different podcast that has people like you on there. You could have been on either one because, I mean, your story's that inspirational. But it's been my honor to talk to you today. We've got maybe bring you on again.
Yeah, anytime.
Talk some more. Maybe we'll talk about some current events and what your thoughts are on certain things. But before we let you go, I want to thank everybody today for joining us. We'd like to thank our sponsors at Believe. Once again, stay bulletproof. Have a happy and blessed 2026. And hopefully, I get more guests like Heather. And make sure you follow her because she's doing some amazing stuff. Heather, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Steve. It was my honor. I appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.